Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
This administration has essentially forfeited any negotiations on tariffs, so as far as new market access or expanded market access, it'd be really tough.
Kent Backus is Executive Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
But that was supposed to be one of the big hallmarks of this administration, and its foreign policy prowess was delivering this new era of trade. But it looks like, you know, their goal of trying to get this wrapped up this week along the side of the APEC conference, it looks like all that's being dashed, and we're probably going to see this punted till sometime next year. So that's not a ideal situation for the president to be in. Definitely not good for foreign or economic policy, but this is the reality that they face.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Again, Congress must avoid a shutdown. That's our responsibility. Very aware of that. But we must find a path forward to finish full year bills.
Representative Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut, as the House debates a continuing resolution.
So the worth of this agreement will be proven by what comes next. And the only successful path forward requires the following. First, the majority must recognize reality, abide by the bipartisan budget agreement that accompanied the debt limit law. Second, the Appropriations Committee must be let loose to effectuate the agreement. And that needs a good faith negotiation to set the allocations for all 12 bills. Chair Granger and I have done this before. And she knows that I am ready to get to work to do it again. In the Senate, Chair Murray and Ranking Member Senator Collins are already on a path to dealing with following the budget agreement, so that the four corners of appropriations, and so proud that we are all women, we get it. We're on track. We know how to do this. Lastly, we have to address the crises across the globe that threaten our allies, endangering our own national security. That means a promise to work in good faith to bring forward an emergency supplemental bill that deals with Ukraine, Israel, humanitarian needs, our influence in the Indo-Pacific, and to address border security. Why are we holding up the resources and investments to the American people? And why are we abdicating our leadership in the world community?
Now, the chair of the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee is Dr. Andy Harris from Maryland.
I rise today to support H.R. 6363, a bill that would keep the government operating while putting Congress on a path toward fiscal responsibility. We simply can't continue to pass large, bloated, omnibus appropriations bills just before Christmas, and this bill is a new approach to break the cycle. Moody's changed the outlook of the nation's debt on Friday to negative. Rising interest rates from Bidenomics, the sharp increase in public debt, and a lack of agreement on measures to reduce the public deficit led to that downgrade. This should be a wake-up call for all of us. This bill gives us time to complete our work in a fiscally responsible manner while working toward a more normal appropriations process. Additionally, I'd like to specifically address concerns for funding of the WIC program. I've heard our colleagues on the other side of the aisle use scare tactics and a straw man that this bill does not provide enough funding for WIC in the states. We'll have to have a wait list for participants. Nothing could be further from the absolute truth. Let me remind everyone that provisions in the first CR continue in this bill, so the Department of Agriculture has the authority to maintain WIC participation, period. If states need more money, they should ask USDA for funding, not start wait lists. USDA and OMB have the authority to work together to fully fund the program, and if they don't, it's 100% the fault of the Biden administration. It's shameful that advocacy groups and the Biden administration's team use such scare tactics when they know full well they have the ability to fully fund WIC for the duration of this continuing resolution.
It passed the House. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Ag Committee, ironically, has very little jurisdictional authority over ag labor.
Representing the 1st Congressional District of Arkansas and a member of the House Ag Committee, Rick Crawford.
What we do have is the subject matter expertise and the relationship with the farm community. And so as a member that represents a very rural district, you can imagine I get a lot of phone calls from farmers that are having problems with an H-2A program that is really not, has not maintained pace with the demands of the current farm economy. So we've got some labor shed issues. We can't rely on our domestic workforce because, quite frankly, it's hard to get the domestic workers to come and do the kind of work associated with ag production. And so for a long time, we have relied on essentially outsourcing farm labor. That has historically been from countries and from places like Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, and others in the region. But we're now starting to see countries like South Africa that are displacing to a large degree those other migrant workers. And the program is becoming more costly. There's a variety of reasons we see that are contributing to that. And so Chairman Thompson decided we needed to really formalize an effort to address the ag labor crisis in rural America. And so we stood up the Ag Labor Task Force, which I chair along with my counterpart on the Dem side, Don Davis from North Carolina. So we have been on a mission, and we've actually had about a six-month charter here where we could bring in the relevant stakeholders, have the information that we needed, go out and meet producers, and collect as much information as we could. And Monday of this week, just yesterday, we released the interim report that really kind of puts some meat on the bone what we're trying to do. And I have really qualified this effort by saying that this has been a very narrow focus. And that is to say we are specifically focused on the labor issue. We are not making this about immigration. And this is where we've had problems in the past, where either immigration leverages ag labor or ag labor leverages immigration, and neither one of those issues is addressed effectively. Our goal was to focus only on the labor side as it applies to ag, and our members got that message, and we stayed very, very much within those parameters. And I think we've delivered a great product out of the Ag Committee, and that is this interim report. And we'll finish this up probably by the end of the year with a final report with some legislative recommendations. Now, what we're going to do after this interim report circulates, we're going to allow for members of Congress to come in and sort of make their recommendations as well. We're going to have two or three member day hearings to collect their thoughts as well before we issue a final report with legislative recommendations to the committees of authority. As I mentioned, the committees of authority, ag is not in the equation. We have to go to judiciary, foreign affairs, education and workforce, and in some cases, ways and means. But ag has very little jurisdictional authority. But what we do have, as I mentioned before, is the experience to provide what we think are really good recommendations to the committees of authority. And so we're probably going to take a piecemeal approach to this and address those issues in the relevant committees. But we do feel like we're going to make some good, strong recommendations that's based in reality.
Arkansas Representative Rick Crawford, and this is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is our update from 2023.
The nation is almost bankrupt. Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
73% of the spending members of Congress get functionally have no voice on. We don't vote on it. That's mandatory. That's Social Security, that's Medicare, that's certain veterans benefits, certain tribal benefits, those things that are formula, we call mandatory. They're mostly earned benefits. Some are benefits that are you get because you fell below a certain income, but they're a formula. You see this green and this blue? The blue is defense. The green, 15%, that's all other. Let's call it non-defense discretionary. The blue, obviously, is all of defense. That's 13%. All of this colored area right here, the green and the blue, is on borrowed money. Every dime members of Congress vote on is on borrowed money. And then last year, about $400 billion of this red was on borrowed money. So as we kick each other's heads in here, which a lot of it's well worth doing, fighting for a little here, a little there, we're borrowing about $6.5 billion a day. I think on average about $77,000, $78,000 a second. And one of the reasons I come back to this is being home this weekend, having some conversations with people. These are smart. I represent one of the best educated districts in America. And you have these conversations, David. David, if it just weren't for waste and fraud. David, if it weren't for foreign aid. Or my friends on the left, and I'm going to show a bunch of slides here because I need to nail this down. If we just would tax rich people more, we'd be fine. None of that is true. You take the math and take every Democrat proposal, let's start with this one, and do tax maximization on those over $400,000. So on estate tax, income tax, capital gains tax, you do the tax maximization and then do the economic model. You get about 1.5% of GDP. Last year, we borrowed 8.4% of GDP. Turns out 1.5 is a hell of a lot less than 8.4. But this being a math-free zone, I thought we might do this several times to see if some of it sinks in. So once again, 73% of our spending is on autopilot. If we don't really move defense, all we're fighting over right now is within this green wedge, 15% of our spending. That's what's going on. So let's actually talk through what's happening around us. If I had come to this floor a year or two ago and said gross interest in the 2024 fiscal year was going to cross over $1 trillion, you would have laughed your hearts out. Guess what? OMB a couple hours ago confirmed it's going, gross interest is going to be over $1 trillion this year, making it the second biggest expense of this government. Does anyone understand? A couple years ago, it was 3-4 years ago, we were looking at numbers of $300, $400 billion. We've more than doubled it. Does anyone care?
Arizona Representative David Schweikert. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Chinese grain production expected to hit a new high this season, highlighting annual increases for the past 4 years. According to the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs, the estimate comes as more than 96% of the crops have been harvested. China working to become more self-sufficient in light of growing geopolitical threats and volatility in weather patterns. Now, one effort local farmers are using to fuel the increase is a production technique where corn and soybeans are planted side by side in a field, with the corn providing shade for the bean crop so that the bacteria in the soybean roots can enhance the fertility of the corn. Latest estimates from USDA still show the country importing around 17 million metric tons this year, down 15% year-on-year, mainly from the U.S., Brazil, and Ukraine. Well, despite an aggressive effort by both agriculture committees, Congress will neither consider nor pass a new farm bill in 2023. Representative G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania is the chairman of the House Ag Committee and has echoed, at least for the past year, his desire to get a replacement for the now expired 2018 Farm Bill. He wanted to see it across the finish line. But due to two long delayed efforts to name a Speaker of the House and now growing concern over the federal deficit, even passage of an extension might be a challenge. Four leaders of the House and Senate Ag Committees released a statement earlier in the week explaining that as negotiations on funding the government progress, They're able to come together to avoid a lapse in funding for critical ag programs and provide certainty to producers. They add that the extension is in no way a substitute for passing a five-year farm bill and that they remain committed to working together to get it done next year. Congressional Budget Office is currently scoring the House's version of a one-year extension. Well, with the Thanksgiving holiday approaching, many families set to prepare a traditional meal featuring turkey, dressing, ham, and, of course, the sides. Now, according to the National Farmers Union, while that meal is expected to retail for $50.62 this year, farmers will receive only 7% of that amount, equals $3.57. Mashed potatoes will earn a farmer 16% of the retail price, followed by frozen corn at 14% and a 10% return on the boneless ham and canned cranberries. And although the price of the turkey, an 11-pound frozen turkey this season, is less than last year, $21.89, farmer only receives 3% of that value, 66 cents. So, according to NFU's Thanksgiving Farmer Share, turkey, farmer gets 66 cents, 64 cents from mashed potatoes, 41 cents from sweet corn, just 9 cents on a box of stuffing. At boneless ham, $1.32. Pumpkin pie filling, 15-ounce can. Pumpkins get, the farmers get 16 cents. And again, cranberries, farmer share, just 29 cents. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It is a very important concept, especially when it comes to estate planning and that type of thing.
Eric Gullixrud is Vice President of Tax and Accounting at Compeer Financial.
The basics here of basis, and you know, it's the original basis of, in property is adjusted, increased or decreased by certain events. Then, for example, if you add some improvements to that, add up, you know, some other items, your basis can go up. Likewise, if you take depreciation, have a casualty loss or some credits, you can actually reduce your basis. So the basis is a very important concept in tax for sure.
What would an example be?
Purchase of tractor in 2018, $100,000. I bought it straight out and you take off the depreciation. So today my remaining basis in this tractor is $64,286. So just wanted to give you a basic example of what basis is.
So how does it work?
So when we move into inherited or stepped-up basis, what we're talking about is basically it's inherited will have a basis equal to its fair market value at the date of the decedent's death, and that's what we call the stepped-up basis. Now, that is going to depend on which state you're in, community property state like Wisconsin I'm in. We can get a full stepped-up basis. So mom or dad pass away, we get the full stepped-up basis. Everything's appraised and determine what that new basis is. So again, it depends on what state you're in. The surviving spouse, you know, will either get a whole or half up there. And appraisals are highly recommended and really almost should, I tell my clients, required. So we have something to hang our hat on. Where did we come up with these values? So the basis step up basically includes pretty much everything that the owner owns. So we've got real estate, the buildings and improvements, machinery and grain and livestock, and growing crops and inputs. And that's an interesting one for the growing crops. For example, if the farmer, you know, deducted all this seed and fertilizer in December and passes away in February, or even after that, all those or expenses or costs, it's an inventory item, can all be taken as a step up and re-expensed. So any assets of any value should be considered supplies, whatever it is that the farmer owns. One of the other differences here is corporations. It's not quite as lucrative because of the assets inside the corporation do not get the step up, but they are all valued, and then that increases your basis in that corporation. So the person inheriting those shares will not see really the value of that step up until the day that they sell the corporation.
So breaking it down further, he's got a basic scenario.
So I did put together just a basic farm scenario here. So here we got the land, buildings, machinery, crops, and the home, the fair market value of $10,700,000. The basis at the date of death, and we see a lot of this with real estate, if they've owned it 20, 30 years, a lot of buildings depreciated out, machinery depreciated. So in this particular case, the basis at death is $940,000. If this was a case where they, like Wisconsin Community Property State, everything stepped up, the surviving spouse would now have a basis of $10,700,000, and all those buildings, machinery, can all start to be redepreciated again. So this is huge. So one of the ideas that was going to throw out and still is, throw the stepped-up basis out of the equation, we're back to that surviving spouse having that original basis at death, and we're talking some pretty tremendous tax consequences. And unfortunately, quite a few of our clients aren't debt-free at death, and so not only have the debt that is remaining, but they also have, they're going to have the tax consequences to take care of.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You ask for real math, real policy decisions. So we on the right, we're going to battle each other and try to cut parts of discretionary, non-defense discretionary.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
Okay, there's a bunch of that I'd love to get rid of. It's a really interesting ethical question. Is it ethical for us to borrow money and give it to entities around the country that have their own taxing authority? Now, that's going to be politically really unpopular, but it is sort of absurd we do that. And that's actually about 40% of non-defense discretionary is actually transfers to entities that have their own taxing authority. But if you're functionally borrowing $80, $90 billion a month, you just covered, you know, three and a quarter months worth of borrowing by wiping out most of the discretionary budget, and then the next year gets worse, the next year gets worse, the next year gets worse. Because remember, 100% of the future borrowing is driven by Medicare, and then in 9 years when the Social Security Trust Fund is gone, and I showed you the scale of that. Mr. Speaker, I've come behind this microphone for years now and walked actually through some really interesting things we can do. We saw during the 1 minute, some of our brothers and sisters here came up and talked about this being diabetes awareness. Diabetes is the single biggest cost of healthcare. It's actually the single biggest cost to this government. 33% of healthcare, 31% of Medicare. I've come up here repeatedly and talked about what we could do in the Farm Bill, the new blood glucose monitors, the discussion of some of the GLP-1s and the effect they're having on obesity and diabetes. There is a path, and it turns out the Joint Economic Committee, about 4 months ago, the Republican side, Chapter 3, we went where we're not supposed to go, but it was real math. We talked about our brothers and sisters' longevity, the fact that the last 4 years, life expectancy in the United States has fallen. And if you actually look at the math, what's the number one reason? It wasn't drugs. Drugs was up there. It was obesity. Let's actually have an honest conversation, because it also turns out it's not only a moral battle to save our brothers and sisters from dying young, it also is the most powerful thing you can do to starting to stabilize U.S. debt, is helping Americans be healthier. Isn't that something neat? Is that Republican or Democrat? It's neither. It's just the right thing to do. And we were coming up with a few $1 trillion over 10 years by taking on obesity. Because of diabetes, heart disease, kidney failures, all these other things. I'm just trying to do two things here. Have an understanding how brutally ugly the actual debt and deficit math is. And that the solutions being provided to it are just fantasy land, ridiculous, childish, asinine. And then the second thing I'm trying to do when I come behind this mic, there are things we can do to have a revolution and stabilize this debt. And none of them are going to be easy. But in the complexity is the morality. We could work with people to be healthier. We could bring technology to make lives easier, to provide more access, particularly to healthcare, and you would disrupt the cost. The hardest part for us as electeds, you're going to have to deal with those armies of lobbyists marching up and down your hallways, and look them in the eye and say, in many ways, the morality, the cure, is in the disruption of doing the right and moral thing. I just don't know if this body has the intellectual prowess to actually deal with it.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The 2018 Farm Bill has been extended. Over the weekend, chairs and ranking members of the Senate and House Agriculture Committees announced a one-year extension of the current Farm Bill, a measure originating from continuing federal budget debates in Congress that threatened passage of a new Farm Bill by the end of this year. At a recent Farm Foundation forum, University of Illinois professor Jonathan Coppice said Farm Bill's passing in the year of originally intended date of completion has been rare of late.
The Farm Bill in 1996 began in 1995, complicated by budget issues. What became the 2002 Farm Bill really began being debated in 2001, so that stretched over multiple years. Again, what became the 2008 Farm Bill started in 2007. And the current record holder for the longest stretch is the Farm Bill that got enacted in early 2014, and it really began in 2011. It was supposed to have been reauthorized in 2012. And then the 2018 Farm Bill is actually the only one in recent history that has been reauthorized within the year of the expiration.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.